Warning, the Not Real Art podcast is intended for creative audiences only. The Not Real Art podcast celebrates creativity and creative culture worldwide. It contains material that is fresh, fun and inspiring and is not suitable for boring old art snobs. Now, let's get started and enjoy the show. Oh, 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 oh.
Greetings and salutations, my creative brothers and sisters. Welcome to Not Real Art, the podcast where we talk to the world's most creative people. I am your host, faithful, trusty, loyal, tireless, relentless, stubborn host, Sourdough, coming at you from Crew West Studio in Los Angeles. Man, do we have a fun show for you today. We have, like, the one-of-a-kind character, complete iconoclast, you know, I like to say we talk to the world's most creative people, but then there are creative people behind the creative people, right? And Wally Fursten is one of those people. Wally Fursten is a legend in entertainment, especially late night and comedy. He has been doing cue cards for the Saturday Night Live show since 1990. He has been doing cue cards for any number of late night shows, not the least of which is the Seth Meyers, for example. And you're going to hear all about it in 1 second when we get into this interview with Wally, which I so love and I'm going to talk about in a second. But before I do, of course, I want to thank you for tuning in. We do this for you. It's all about you. And so I'm so grateful for your loyalty and your support. Thank you so much. I want, of course, as always, to encourage you to go to our website, notrealart.com, and check out all the good, healthy stuff we got for you there. It's all free-range organic. No pesticides or antibiotics or steroids were used in the making of our content. But on our website, you will discover amazing artists and art that will inspire you and just really lift your spirits. Of course, check out our monthly online art exhibition, First Fridays, which drops every month on the first Friday of the month. So check that out. We have some incredible shows of featuring some incredible art and artists. So check it out. Also check out our exclusive video series Remote with the one and only Badir McCleary, who takes us on a tour of public art in America and tells us what it all means, or at least what it means to him. And it is a wonderful series. So check that out, Remote, on our website, notrealart.com. Okay, people, without further ado, we have the one and only Wally Fursten here with us today. And I tell you what, Wally has been the head cue card guy on Saturday Night Live for the last 30 years. And he's been playing an offbeat, bastarded version of himself, you know, on TV and film. You know, he's been behind the camera, but now he's kind of in front of the camera. He's becoming a bit of a character, a bit of a celebrity himself. He holds the cards for Seth Meyers, and Seth Meyers has had him on the show. And he's, you know, over the last several years or many years, he's become just a beloved feature and character on these shows. They turn the camera on Wally because he's such a, you know, lovable, smart, funny human who does this incredible thing. He writes the cue cards that comics and creatives and artists like Seth Meyers read from. You know, Michael Che from Saturday Night Live, Colin Jost, on and on. He's holding the cards for these guys. And you've probably seen him on late night or on Saturday Night Live because they turn the camera on him. And I had discovered him in part because they did an article, or there was a story on TV about his company, and I just thought, my God, what a cool! I mean, how do you get that job? How do you get the job to write the cue cards for a show? I mean, what, you know? Because I mean, you got to be a good, your penmanship's got to be good. What kind of materials do you use? What kind of markers? And people have got to be able to read it. And what, is there an apprenticeship? How do you learn this skill? How do you learn this talent? You know, and I was so interested to learn about Wally, and I wanted to have him on the show. And then I discovered that he has a company whereby you can, you know, order, a cue card from him for a birthday or for a wedding or, you know, a special gift of some kind. And, you know, he has this company called Cue Cards by Wally. You got to check out cuecardsbywally.com. And, you know, for a very, very affordable price, he will not just write a cue card for you, but he will create a video and you can send it as a special gift, what have you. And so, and I did that. It was a wonderful service. And so I definitely encourage you to check it out. So without further ado, let's get into this and hear from the one and only Wally Fierce. Wally, welcome to the Not Real Art Podcast.
Scott, thank you so much for having me. Appreciate
it. Man, I am honored. I'm so, you know, I was trying to remember how I first got the idea. Well, how I came to know you, or how I discovered, you know, the infamous Wally. And it must have been, you know, watching a late night show or something when, you know, they turn the cameras on you or something. And then somehow, some way, I realized that you were doing, you know, the custom cards and everything. And I said, man, I want to get Wally on the podcast because we love talking to what we like to say, the world's most creative people. But you have such an interesting job and an interesting life. And I know our audience is just going to love hearing from you and hearing about how Wally became Wally. But I mean, just to level set a little bit, I mean, you know, you work for SNL. Correct. You work for Seth Meyers.
Correct.
What other shows are you working on right now?
Well, I have, you know, I have two companies. The one you talked about, the personalized cue cards I started in 2020. We can talk about that later.
Yep.
New York City Cue Cards, which is the company. I'm a vendor to these TV shows. So right now we do Saturday Night Live, Late Night with Seth Meyers, and The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. Those are the three main shows that I have. They're all in the same building. They're all within two floors of each other. Seth and SNL are on the same floor right next to each other, which is great because those are the shows I work on. But I have three guys that work on The Tonight Show, and I just kind of supervise them. They're pretty much on automatic pilot, so I don't really have to worry about them. And then there's shows that come, little one-offs that come. I was in Miami shooting something over the summer, and then I was in Toronto shooting a commercial with Ryan Reynolds and things like that. Those little shows pop up every now and again just to you know, add some spice to the business. That's it. But the main shows are those three.
You know, there's so many different dimensions and facets to what you do that, you know, I'd love to try to touch on as many as we can, because, sure. You know, I'm a Chicago guy, you know, born and raised in the suburbs. You know, I recently had a guy on the podcast named Chess Perry, and Chess is kind of a famous sign painter in Chicago. You know, he studied sign painting and sign making as an apprentice, you know, 30, 40 years ago. And, you know, he's kind of become a bit of a legend, you know, there, you know, doing what he does. And, you know, there's such an artistry, you know, I think a lot of yeah. artists might, or a lot of people may not appreciate the artistry. And what I loved about, you know, Chess's story is that he was, you know, I mean, he's a master at his craft, and so are you. You are a master of your craft. And, you know, and I guess I could have guessed, you know, how, you know, a sign painter becomes a sign painter, but I could never guess how a cue card writer becomes a cue card writer. I mean, how the hell, Wally? Well, you got PhD in cue cards?
There's guys that work for me that it's just a normal story. They're taking a job. It's their first job getting into business, and they want to do something else. I didn't even know what cue cards were. I went to school. I wanted to be a writer. Ever since the fifth grade, I wanted to write. I wanted to write for TV and film. I was brought up in a funny family. My brother's a famous writer. He wrote for Seinfeld and for Letterman and stuff. So okay. We grew up in this family that wanted to do this. And I took the job as a cue card guy to get my foot in the door. It was my first job after college. 3 years, I went to Syracuse and went to Newhouse and, you know, just wanted to write. So I took the job to just make some connections and write. And I started writing jokes for Norm MacDonald for Weekend Update and started doing stuff like that. So I'm like, this is great. I'll do this for a little while and then I'll start doing some more writing. And I did. And I started getting, you know, I wrote a Space Ghost Coast to Coast episode and I started writing from some stuff for Celebrity Deathmatch and all these other little shows. But it was never enough to pay the rent. You know, it was never enough to quit the cue cards and do that full time. And I started getting better and better at cue cards. And my brother, who was writing, I think probably for Seinfeld at the time, was like, you need to make a decision. You need to leave cue cards and really focus on writing if you want to really do that, or commit fully to cue cards. And I did leave for four months. I took some time off and I went to LA and I took meetings, and you know what Hollywood's like and LA is like. They take meetings and they're like, yeah, those are great ideas. Come back. And then nothing ever happens.
Right.
So I just got married and went back to doing cue cards. And you know, I was basically running the show 3 years in 93. I started in 90. I was running the show. And then I just got really, really good at it. There's something about it. Not so much the writing, which is the art you talk about. We'll talk about that later. But the holding and all the other things that go with it, and the temperament, dealing with celebrities and pressure. For some reason, that didn't bother me. It was just, I looked at it as it was pressure and it was, you know, stressful, but it was fun. It was a fun thing to do. And I just got so good at it that I became the person, you know, and I started my company in 2004 when the company we were working for, they were bouncing our paychecks and we couldn't order stuff because they weren't paying the suppliers. And I just basically started out of necessity. I didn't want to own a company. I knew nothing about it. Thank God I have a wife that like was an entrepreneur and liked to start businesses. So she helped me a lot. And it was just something that for some reason, I don't know why, I was really good at it. But my penmanship was terrible. And it's still not great. I mean, the irony of my career, if you look at this, when I tell you this, every single report card I got growing up from first grade to when I graduated high school was great grades, great kid, worst handwriting we've ever seen. And now I make my living with my handwriting.
Fuck you, Mrs. Smith.
That's right. Every teacher I had.
Well, by the way, I love the fact that you just told that story, because I had a question here. I was just going to, you know, goofball question. I was going to say, Wally, does this mean that, you know, in your professional life, your penmanship is perfect, but in your personal life, your penmanship is shit? And I guess if I get a letter from you, I couldn't read it, but if I get a cue card from you, no problem.
Yeah, no, you know, it's different. You know, that's the thing. You know, I do print when I write with a pen, I print capital letters like cue cards. Right? So it does look neater, but the pens we use, I can show you the pens we use here, these thick pens, you know, you're printing, you're not writing. You don't use your fingers. You use your hand. You move your hand back and forth and up and down and around. So it's different. It's something that can be taught. You just need to practice it. And, you know, I got good at it. I got good enough, obviously, that I kept my job and I was, you know, the top person there. So, and then, you know, my printing is what I taught everybody else. So everybody's printing may look neater, but it's basically a copy of what my printing is, you know? So,
the tradition, right? I mean, you know, like, and I want to go back to that. I mean, there's so many things, you know, because I want to have a conversation about, you know, about all these layers, because obviously on one hand, this connects to, you know, topography design and you know, all that, you know, sign art stuff that we talked about, and you know, there's got to be a type A OCD component, obsessive compulsive component to that, you know. You know, and I have a buddy of mine's son is a phenomenal topography designer, and I mean, but he's just like a mad scientist, right? You know, he's that, you know. But then, you know, so there's the, you know, because art school, design school track. But then, of course, I'm guessing there is the more of a trades-like journey of apprenticeship and things. But you know, cue cards, as I understand it, I don't know the history. I want to ask you. I mean, obviously, teleprompters didn't exist. Cue cards existed far before teleprompters. Yeah. So go back, you know, help me understand the history of where cue cards started and the tradition and the legacy that you're continuing.
Yeah. So yeah, before prompters were a thing, before they were invented, you know, TV shows, a lot of TV shows were live. So they used cue cards. Bob Hope relied on them. A lot of the shows used cue cards. So they had in-house cue card departments, you know, that all the networks, NBC had one, CBS, they all had them because they were shooting these shows live, or, you know, live to tape, and they didn't have any time. So it was all in-house. Then the prompter came along. I'm not sure when. And when the prompter came along and simplified that they could talk right to camera, then the cue cards went out of house to, like, you know, vendors like myself. Mm-hmm. And prompters took over. And then, you know, cue cards slowly probably started fading because, you know, prompter was better. But some shows still use cue cards. The variety shows use them and the talk shows use them because it was just something, you know, that they were used to, I think.
Yeah.
And if you're going to do sketches, like Johnny Carson would do sketches, you know, he would have his monologue on cards. but he could do that on a prompter if it had it. But he does, like, you know, they did sketches, so they want cards on either side, you know. So it was, mm-hmm. it was just something he was used to, so he used cue cards. And I think that's the majority of it. The people that I do cards for now, Jimmy Fallon, Seth Meyers, you know, Conan, I did cards for him. It's all people that came from Saturday Night Live that learned how to do things with cue cards, not a prompter. So that's why they kept it. They were happy with cue cards. They were familiar with it. They liked the rhythm of it, and they got used to it. Yeah, but that's the history that I basically, you know right now. So yeah, and I guess right now I'm the biggest cue card company in the. I could say the world, but that's pretty audacious to say that. I say the country, you know.
So. Well, but I mean, but you know, perhaps yes, maybe you are likely the biggest company in the world, but I'm guessing you're probably one of the most famous cue card writers to ever exist because. Yes. You have such a great personality and you're funny and one way or another, they turn the camera on you and people, you know, you delighted people. That's amazing. Yeah. So were there other famous cue card writers and like, were there any, you know, sort of legends of the craft?
Sure. Well, Tony Mendez, do you know Tony Mendez trained me on SNL and then went over, he was David Letterman's cue card guy. Inky, they called him Tony, you know, okay. He was on camera all the time. He had his own show after the show. It's like a 5-minute internet show that he had. He had a billboard in Times Square. So he was pretty big. He was almost like kind of like, oh, I kind of want to aspire to that maybe. But again, that wasn't his choice. It was Dave putting him on camera and right. him, you know, having fun with it, you know. There's some other older guys. Barney McNulty is one of the most famous. I think he did Bob Hope's cards and stuff, but I don't think he was on camera. I don't think they, you know, he was just like the biggest guy back in the 60s and, you know, in that time. So, really, I think Tony and myself, and I can't really think of anybody else. Kevin Kay, whose uncle owned the company when I started, he was Letterman's first cue card guy on the show. I forget what Dave called him. Maybe it's just Kevin the cue card guy. That's I knew him from watching the show.
Right.
But yeah, he was on as well a little bit too. But
man, it's so fascinating. Such a fascinating world. Yeah. And you know, I'm reminded of that music documentary, you know, 10 Feet from Stardom. I don't know if you saw it, where by the back, you know, it's like, you know, the cue card, Wally, the, you know, is 10 feet for stardom, but you are literally becoming a star unto your own, unto your own. And that's just amazing. Well, you know, right. So there's a tradition, a legacy. There were legends that, you know, made the craft, you know, I guess what it is.
Yeah.
And you pass down these skills to some of your other employees. I mean, how many employees do you have right now that are working?
I think it's right around 14 or 15.
14 or 15.
They'll work on the three shows.
Right. So, right. So, okay. So, I mean, yeah, I guess I mean, there must be, you must have an army kind of, right. Volume, the changes and the constant, amendments, right.
Yeah. You need it. Like, you know, for Seth, we have 5 people that work on Seth on closer look days, because that's so long. We get it really late in the day. So we had to add a couple people to help us print that. It's usually about 25, 30 pages sometimes. So we need to print that in like a half an hour. And then Fallon has 3 people full time. And then SNL, on Thursday, I've got 3 people working. On Friday, I've got 8 people working. And on Saturday, I've got, 9 plus myself, 10 people working on Saturday. So, and a lot of those people like that work on Seth will work on SNL, and a lot of people that work on Fallon, they work on SNL as well. So everybody's I'm kind of like moving people around where I need them.
So, and you know, tell me to fuck off if I'm asking business questions that are confidential, but like, so are these employees, are they like full-time staff employees or are they like independent contractors? Is it like a,
well, family? I mean, I up until last year I was a vendor, mm-hmm. and they were, you know, some of them were full-time and some of them were part-time.
Yeah.
They were all W-4s.
Right.
But they unionized last year and I really can't talk about that, but we just came to an agreement after a year of negotiations, pretty much. Well, not a lot went on to the strike, but now now all my employees are in Local One IETSE, and we just have I just signed the papers today, actually. So they'll all be union. They'll be getting more money. They'll be getting health benefits, which I never had because I was a small company and really that I couldn't afford that with them.
Right.
I had a 401k. I had profit sharing. I did, but you know, they wanted more, and you know, my company was based on, you know, come in, do cards, you know, make some money and then find what you want to do and leave, you know?
Right,
and
right, right.
People, you know, I guess to my, I guess it's a good thing. People like the job and they wanted to stay and they have fun doing it and they like working there. And so it became more of a like, oh, I need to make more money to survive. So I understand it. Like I said, you know, we came to an agreement. It was very good negotiations, very nice. And so now, and again, I think there's only six full-time and then the rest are part-time because there's not that many hours, especially SNL's, you know, only 21 weeks out of the year and they don't shoot the other years, the other days, but yeah, it's a mix of both.
Yeah. Well, and thanks for all that. I appreciate all that information. I mean, you know, cause I wondered, you know, to what extent your guys or your shop was union versus non-union or whatever. I mean, my wife and I couldn't sell our house last year because the writers and the actors were striking. They're all of our buyers, you know? we're over the strikes. Let's not strike anymore if we can avoid it. So I'm glad you closed your deal. That's great. And then, and again, tell me to fuck off. I'm just curious. Like, so how then do you bill the shows? Like, are you billing them per card? Are you billing them per person? Like hour? Is it like a project rate, a show rate, an episode rate? Like
it's a show rate. Like, you know, for SNL, I bill them a certain amount and then I pay my employees, you know, from that. And I pay all that. I buy the supplies and, you know, whatever expenses I else have. For Seth and Fallon, I bill them, you know, weekly for how many shows we do and the same kind of thing. But, you know, that's basically it. Then I pay the guys.
So, I mean, these guys work with you because they trust you. You're a pro. They like you. They probably don't have to like you to work with you, but the fact that they like you, you've known each other for years, maybe in many cases you've worked together. But I mean, how do you have to adjust? So whether you're working for Seth or whether you're working for SNL or let's not use SNL because SNL is like slightly different, but like, just, you know, if you're doing talk shows, like if you're doing late night talk shows, just for example, you know, do the hosts have different idiosyncratic kinds of needs and wants from you? And how do you adjust and manage that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so I, you know, when Seth was on SNL for, I think 11 years, something like that, I held most of his cue cards. People ask him, you know, why do we use cue cards and stuff like that? And he's probably right. He's like, I probably held up 90% of his cards since he's been on TV in 20 years between SNL and late night. When he took over late night, I was only working 3 days a week at SNL. I was having a nice cushy job. I was off for the summers. You know, I spent it with my boys were younger, so it was good. I get to see them a lot. And then, he started, the boys were older and I went to them and I said, you guys going to use cue cards? And they said, yes. I was like, well, I'd like to do cards for Seth. I'll be the lead on the show. You know, what do you guys think of that? And they jumped at it. They were so happy because Seth, I just wanted them not to worry about cue cards. I didn't want to throw a new person in there that didn't know his rhythms and that didn't know.
Right.
And he knows me. I wanted him to be able to focus on the writing and all that other stuff that goes into producing a new show. And I know Seth's rhythms and he knows my rhythms. If I, you know, if he reads two, we have a connection.
It's like a dancing partner. You guys are like dancing.
Exactly. Like if he screws up something, I can pull the card back. Or if he takes a pause at the end of it, because when you're pulling a card, I'm pulling the card on like the third or fourth, the last word of the card, because they've already got it in their head. Mm. But if he takes a pause on that word and he might forget those, maybe the last sentence, I got to grab it back from the guy I just gave it to in time to get it to him. Sometimes like that. So we have each other. I know it is like a dance. Like I know his rhythms. He knows my rhythms. He knows, you know, he trusts me and it's a relationship and it's trust. Really. The trust is the thing.
Right. It's like, are you going to catch me when I fall? And you do. And that trust is built up over years. And wow. What a special relationship you have.
Yeah. Well, with Seth especially, but you know, I get to do that every week here. You know, I'm in charge of the host of SNL every week. So I meet them on a Thursday and then I work with them for 3 days and I build up this relationship with them because they're fully trusting me. And it's all about, I'm trying to gain their trust Thursday and Friday so that they can relax on Saturday. And I've made some really, really great people and have some really, really, I consider them, you know, new friends because of that trust that I build with them, especially if they come back and host two or three times. You know, they know the process and they can relax and we just get to know each other. And it's a wonderful job to have. It really is.
Well, so I wasn't going to mention this till later, but it dawned on me as I was thinking about our talk today that indeed, if you are holding the cards for the host, and if indeed you held the cards for Quinta Brunson when she hosted, I was in the room that night. So we literally were in the same room together.
That's awesome. Of course.
Yeah, that was amazing. Like, I was so blown away at seeing that dance. Talk about dancing. You know, this, you know, clearly everyone in the room, many of those folks, I mean, the cast, you know, is like, are the young bucks in the room, because it feels like everybody behind, you know, behind the camera, so to speak, are like multi-year veterans who could do this in their sleep. I mean, just the dance that you guys do in that small space, it's incredible to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll never watch the show the same on TV, because you know what's going on. Like during that commercial break, you know, it's the madness and the moving around and the stuff. Yeah, it is truly amazing. Especially, I'm glad you get to see it, because it really is, gives you a whole perspective on what the show is. And were you watching us do cue cards as well as watching the actors do the sketches?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, little did I know that we would be doing this. You know, but I was just so amazed at all the moving parts. Right. And of course on TV, the studio looks so much bigger than it actually is. Right. And then, you know, and then to see this dance, but then also to appreciate the fact that, wait a minute, you guys go from zero to hero in 6 days. Like, you know, like that show wraps on that Saturday night. And then on Monday, you start again with a blank sheet of paper, and you build sets, and you do all this stuff in 6 days. Like,
well, they don't start building the sets till Wednesday night. They don't start building the sets Wednesday night. You know, all the creative stuff is done. Like Monday, they talk to they meet the host. Tuesday, they do the writing. Wednesday's the read through. Then Wednesday night, they pick the sketches, and then they start building the sets. We don't rehearse till Thursday afternoon at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Crazy.
What a grind.
There's times on Saturday night at like 12:45 and we have 15 minutes to go, maybe one more sketch to go, where I look at the mirror and I was just like, I don't know how we get here every week. Like every week, like I'm amazed. And I've worked there for 34 years and I'm still amazed that sometimes we put the show on that we put on. It's crazy.
It's wild. And it was so fascinating also to watch Lauren kind of walking around as he does, you know, with his hands behind his back in his suit. I mean, he's just the Yoda, you know, kind of figure. It was just amazing to watch. I was so charmed and delighted and grateful that I got the opportunity to be in the room.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. So who was your first big show or celebrity that you worked with? Was it SNL? Is that where you got your first?
Yeah, that's where I started. Yeah. So, I mean, I, you know, I wasn't running a show for the first 3 years. I, you know, Tony was running it and he was just putting me in stuff. But, you know, my handwriting was not good. And I think he wanted to get me fired. So he put me in really hard sketches to start. Like I would never, like, I don't sometimes let somebody hold for a year. Like, you know, and especially SNL, you know, I'm not going to take a chance that they're going to screw up on live TV. You know, he was giving me these hard sketches the first week. And I really think he wanted to get me fired, but for some reason, like I said before, I was really good at the holding. The it's a lot of hand-eye coordination. I played baseball and tennis and golf, you know, growing up. Right. So I think maybe that helped me. I don't know. For some reason, I took to it. It didn't scare me. I was good at it. And he saw like, oh, this guy can be a really big asset to this department. And, you know, he worked with me on my writing and we got that up to speed. And then I was like the top holder, behind him. And then, you know, 3 years in, he decided to leave and the show picked me to run it. Even though there were like three guys that had 5 years more experience than me, but because of my calm under pressure, that's why they picked me to run it, because that's what they're looking for. They need something. They can't have somebody that freaks out, you know?
Turns out you're a ninja. In another life, you were either a ninja or special forces or whatever. Calm, cool, and collected under pressure, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing too, come back to the SNL example. I mean, you know, that was one of the things that, you know, again, I so appreciated about being there is that, you know, it is, you know, it's, there are so many moving parts and it is, there's high pressure and obviously, and but to see pros do their job, right? You know, who just, you know, get it done and do it with a smile, have fun doing it, love the pressure. You know, it's you're part of a all-star world-class group of super athletes on a certain level.
You're absolutely right. It really is the best of people were doing their job. And, you know, you're not, you know, I started this job when I was 25 years old. I'm 58 right now. You're not supposed to work on the same TV show for 34 years and plus and still going, you know, like how lucky is that too? Like, you know, I was like, you know, I had friends that were starting a job. They'd have it for 2 years and the show would go off the air and they have to find another job. And it's like, how lucky I am to be in that position where my show just stays on and on and on. It's crazy.
Right. No, SNL's got to be one of the longest running shows on television right now. Yeah.
Yeah. For sure.
Wow. For Talk sure. about job security. You got job security in a time when there seems to be no job security.
I know. It's crazy. It really is crazy.
Wow. Wow. Well, you know, I was going to I was going to ask a stupid question about, so who did you get your good handwriting from, your mom or your pop? since you've already established that you had shit handwriting.
I can tell you who I blame it on. My grandfather was a doctor, so I blame it on his. You know, doctors famously have really bad handwriting, so I blame it on him.
There you go. I know. I could have been a doctor based on my handwriting, but I couldn't have been a doctor based on my grades. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, I mean, what does a cue card writer like yourself, Wally? I mean, what keeps you up at night, man? I mean, like it seems like you have so much fun. I mean, I know there's stress, but you're calm, cool, and collected. I mean, you know, it sounds like you're a family man. You got your kids are grown. I mean, it kind of sounds like you have an ideal life. Maybe nothing keeps you up at night. I don't know.
I mean, the negotiations with the union for last year, that was stressful, but you know, it was just more work, you know, I have to really be on my game because we're doing a whole thing where I have to make sure the guys take meal breaks at a certain time. So I got to stay on. I got to kind of get more involved in that aspect of the company, which is the stuff that I hate.
Yeah.
I want to write the cards and hold them up and get the laughs and have fun. You know what I mean? Right, that's why I do it.
Yes.
So that maybe this little bit of the stress on that, but yeah, you know, like I said, my one son graduated from SCAD down in Atlanta. So he's right now working on the SNL 1975 movie as a production assistant. He got the job. So it's his first job out of college. He's really happy down there. He's living with his buddies. My youngest son is graduating from UT Austin in May, and he wants to move out to LA things. So I think he would be like good, maybe TV production, but I think he would be good, like a movie studio executive, something like that.
Right.
He's got a good business sense and wants to run business sense. He's really not sure what he wants to do yet. But and then, you know, we just got a dog, which we never had before because I was allergic, but for some reason I grew out of it. So my wife and I got a dog. We don't have a lot of stress. We have a beach house down the Jersey Shore that we go to in the summer that we bought during the pandemic because we didn't think we'd be traveling a lot. And that has been like the greatest thing we ever did. It has a pool in the backyard. We have the bay across the street. That is just instant relaxation. Right. You walk in the door and it's just you relax. So not a lot of stress.
Yeah. Well, that beauty. I mean, God bless you, brother. I mean, you know, like let's keep it that way. Right.
I know.
But obviously 2020 for all of us was stressful. My God, what an unprecedented, crazy year. You know, as I understand it, Cue Cards by Wally was sort of born during the pandemic. I want to talk about that in one quick second. But, you know, as COVID shut down the shows and what have you, I mean, how did that really impact you in direct ways? Did you just have to go home like everybody else? I mean, were you trying? Because I know they were trying to do some production, maybe from remotely. I don't know. Like, what happened to the cue card game during COVID?
So the show shut down. And they didn't know how. I mean, I think you remember, like, when everything shut down at first, they thought maybe a couple weeks. You know, they weren't sure.
Yeah.
So the shows were actually paying us. Off the beginning, the NBC was allowing them to still pay the employees because they thought it was maybe going to be a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Then as it got to be a month and they saw this isn't going to end, then NBC said, okay, we're not paying the employees anymore.
Right.
So, Seth actually started paying people out of his own pocket.
Wow. You're kidding me.
Nope. Nope. So I was still, getting, I was getting paid, and then I was paying the employees, or they were paying the employees directly. I forget how it works, but he was paying them out of his own pockets. He did that as well during the writer's strike. Did the same thing.
What an incredible, gesture of humanity and empathy.
Yeah. I did also, you know, like I said, my wife was good at business. I got a PPP loan, and I was able to run four big payrolls for the employees during that time as well, yep. which helped out. And then the show started going back remotely. Seth went remotely, Fallon did remotely, but they weren't using cue cards. Once in a while, I did cards, and they wanted to try it. It actually worked. I did cards over Zoom for Seth. Seth and Amy was in LA. Seth was in New York, and they were having trouble syncing up the prompter that they use. So they said, let's try cards. So the director worked with me. I put the cards in front of the camera, and I just had to scroll. We figured it out. And they were both able to read them at the same time, and it worked out perfectly. So we did that a couple of times. It was the first time I ever did cards in front of a Zoom camera for somebody.
Amazing. Amazing.
But yeah, it was only like two times. So right. Once he started going remote, then we weren't, you know, then, you know, I wasn't, no one was still, we still weren't working, you know, it was still like kind of, some of the writers were working and people were working, but we weren't. So it was frustrating. It was really frustrating.
But then the shows kind of came back with no audiences, right? Like it was just bare bones.
That like maybe September-ish, maybe the end of September. Right. Yeah. I remember. Yes. And Seth, yeah, that's where I kind of started getting a lot of airtime when there was no one in the studio. No, you know, it was just me and Seth. You know, they had limited cameramen. They had no band. I don't think they had the band. Maybe they did. I don't. It was just a limited thing. It was a weird time. It really was weird to do it that way. SNL, you know, that's a different. You know, that's a different animal. You know, I mean, you know how you saw how many people were working on that show. You know. Yep. With all the COVID restrictions, I remember Kenny Amon, the producer, called all the department heads in August to a meeting in 8H. And he said, okay, we're coming back in October. He was like, we can only have this amount of people in the studio, and that's including audience. And he was like, there's no way we can do a show with the number of people that we can have working the show. There's no possible way.
Right.
But we're, all of us here, we're going to figure out how we're going to do it. And it was just like, he was like, there's no way we can do it, but let's talk. Let's figure it out. Let's brainstorm. It was really cool. It was really, really neat. And it was just like, oh man. So people just started coming up with ideas and eventually, you know, they worked it out and we put on shows, which was, you know, I'm wearing a face mask and I'm wearing a face shield.
Right.
And that's where the sponge, I don't know if you know my sponge story. I lick my finger when I pull cards before COVID. Because they stick sometimes, you know, and you have to get a grip on them.
Yeah.
When COVID hit and I'm wearing a face mask and a shield, I can't lick my, and plus it's COVID, I can't lick my finger. Right. So I had the props guy get a sponge and glue it to my face shield and wet it so I could, wet my finger.
And a whole new product was marketed. Yeah. Yeah.
People were like, I need that for the supermarket. You know, when you open the bags, you couldn't open the bags. You know how you lick your finger. You can't do that. But Seth, of course, talked about it and it was a whole thing on Seth's show and sponge became really famous. Nice. I had it on necessity, but you know, they made fun of it and got comedy out of it, which is really fun.
Now people with glasses everywhere have a little sponge attached to their glasses, maybe. Just in case, right? Oh my God, that's amazing. So, okay. So you're figuring it out and people are collaborating and problem solving and firefighting and innovating, blah, 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 to get the shows made. Great. Meanwhile, though, of course, you know, you're at home, you know, you're thinking about all kinds of things, obviously, you know, making money's got to be one of them. And somehow, some way, you decide to launch Cue Cards by Wally.
Yeah.
And custom cue cards for real people like me, which, by the way.
Now let's see it. Oh, yes. There it is.
You
made it safely. Love it.
And it was a lot of words. See, and it is. But this is the intro to the podcast that I'll record later, and you'll get a kick out of it, I hope. But anyway, So take us back to the origin story, the inspirational moment where you realized this was a thing.
It's a really good story. Like I told you, my wife's an entrepreneur and she likes to start businesses. That she's in marketing and corporate America, but this is like a little side thing. She started New York City Cue Cards, and helped her dad's company and her brother's company. So a year before COVID, so 2019, I came up with this idea, Cue Cards by Wally, where it was going to be personalized cue cards for people. And she was sitting at the dinner table, and I said, hey, what do you think of this business idea? You know, personalized cue cards for people where I, you know, write what message they want on them and I mail them to them. And she, not even a second, she thought. She was like, nope. And I was like, really? She's like, no. I'm like, all right. So I let it go. And then COVID hit, and for 2 months I was sitting on a couch while she was working from home, doing nothing, gaining weight, not working out, kind of depressed because I wasn't able to work.
Of course.
And she said, I think I want to start another company. I was like, how about Cue Cards by Wally? And she was like, yes, now's the time to do it because people don't have gifts to give their friends. They can't go to weddings. They can't go to birthdays. They can't go to anniversaries. She's like, yes, let's do it. So we talked, we kind of planned. And I was like, I just want to do it really easy. I don't want to do a big business plan. I don't want to have to do this. She was like, okay, we'll do a minimal viable product. You ever heard of that?
MVP, minimal viable product.
I had never heard of it. She was like, we'll start an Instagram account and a Venmo account. And that's what I did. And then I did a couple SNL podcasts and I launched and I started getting orders. And, local New York News did a story on me. They saw it somewhere, and they did like a little story on me, and that helped. But I was getting like maybe 5 or 10 orders a day, something like that, which was good. It was keeping me busy. So NBC, the local NBC, does a story on a Monday night. Tuesday night, my wife wakes me at like 9 a.m. She was like, "You better get up," and I'm like, "Why?" She's like, "You have 350 emails," and I'm like, "What?" I go, what happened? So I find out I used to do cue cards for Carson Daly when he was on Last Call for Carson Daly the first 3 or 4 years. He saw the story on NBC and decided he wanted to do 3 30-second ads for my company, basically 8, 8:30 and 9 or 7. It was like every on the hour, every half hour, 3 times he talked about my company, what I was offering, and it just friggin' blew up. I was like, oh no, because I was doing it all myself. I was answering emails. I was writing. I was done. Oh no, what am I gonna do? And then I started then interview. I was gonna be on Access Hollywood. I was gonna be this. Everybody was like wanted to talk to me. And I started doing some interviews, and then Lauren was like, okay, you know, we're letting you do this. Let's not have too much Wally camera time, you know, like let's not go crazy. So yeah. I didn't do any more, which was good. If I had done more interviews, I would have got inundated. I wouldn't have been able to, you know, fulfill the orders, which would have been a bad business.
Yes.
So that really just kept me going for like the next couple of months. And then we started working again. But it just the feedback from the customers was what really got me through COVID, because I was talking to my wife about this. She's like, I don't know about other companies, but like since we launched, we're over 3 years now, I haven't had one person say, you know what, this isn't what I really thought it was going to be. Can I have my money back? Right. Not one person. So 100%, you know, likability, like they love the product, you know? And yeah, people are like, oh, I couldn't go to my cousin's wedding. And they flipped out over this. And, you know, this is the best gift I've ever given. And I'm going to order again. It was just so nice. It was just so nice. And then the videos I do, you know, I did a video for you as well.
Yes.
You know, those are really fun. That way I can have fun with the customer, and I can riff and I can joke around and they really love, people really love those. So it's just been a joy to me to see the joy that I brought other people. And it really helped during COVID, helped them. And it really helped me as well.
It's such a beautiful story, man. I mean, you know, it really is. And it's at its core, it's a human story. There's so many layers to this. Yeah. And you know, and that's what resonates. And yes, I love my video, by the way. And when I post this podcast episode on the website, in the show notes, and I'm going to have the video that you made me with the photo, and I hope people hear this and throw orders your way. So on average, I mean, like because you're right. I mean, the best parties are the ones you can't get into, right? So the idea right. that you have a limit in terms of what you can do and how you can do it, like how many yeah. are you doing now, like on an average month?
You know, it varies. You know, what I notice is when SNL is off, like we're off for these next 2 weekends, mm-hmm. I don't get a ton of orders. Mm-hmm. But as soon mm-hmm. as the show comes back on, I'll get like maybe, you know, 4 or 5, you know.
Sure.
A 6 a week, which is yeah. fine. It just keeps me busy.
Right.
It's just people watching the show and like, oh yeah, I want to get that card, or oh there's Wally. Oh right, I wanted to get that card for my friend. You know, that right, kind of right. thing. And I mean, I get a lot of repeat business. I get a lot of. It's just. I think I've sent cards to 15 different countries and maybe every state now in the United States. I've sent cards to. It's just really cool. You just see where the SNL fans are, the late night fans are. Yeah. It's really, really neat. It's really, really fun.
Well, in that, I have to ask, I mean, is there a secondary aftermarket for the used cards that you write for Seth or SNL? Like, what happens to the cards after they're done?
No, that's a good question. Like years ago, I had that, you know, I think, and I wasn't the first person, and people keep on pitching it to me. Oh, you should sell them and give the money to charity kind of thing, you know, because people would want these, and they do want them. But, you know, I know a little bit about the businesses that I already have. Charity mm-hmm. business is a whole different thing, and all these yeah. different rate rules and regulations you have to follow. And, you right. know, someone said to me, there's a lot that goes with that before you want to pitch, be able to take that on. So, I was advised not to do it. But, you know, once I write NBC's words on it, it's not my property anymore.
Well, right, NBC's, there's that. Yeah.
It's NBC's property. When they're blank, they're mine. When I write a script, you know, joke on there, it's NBC's. So some of the writers come and get cards. We give cards out to, like, staff people that are leaving. Or, you know, when the host hosts, I'll ask them if they want souvenirs. And most of the time they do. So I'll give them their whole monologue on the cue cards.
Nice.
And then, like, 3 or 4 cards from every sketch they were in. They love that. But for the most part, they get put in a big pile back in the studio, and the scenic artists use them to catch paint when they're painting the sets the next week. So 1 week they're comedy gold, and the next week they just catch paint on the floor.
That's amazing. And by the way, like it's at that point that I would love to get one and frame it and call it art because of the journey, you know, from
with the paint specs on it.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay.
I have a great story, and it's going to put you – you're going to be really excited that you said that.
Well, let's hear it.
All right. So Christopher Walken is hosting, and it's like maybe his fifth time hosting, okay? That with probably 4 with me or 3 with me. And we're walking out to a set, and he looks down and sees cards on the floor with paint speckles on them. And he's like, what's that? What's that card from? I'm not going to do a Walken right now because my voice is a little different. And I said, oh, that's from a sketch we had last week. And he's looking at it and he's eyeing up and down. He's like, can I have that? And I was like, yeah, you can have it. So he didn't pick it up. He went, I thought he was like fucking with me.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Really, because it's Christopher Walken. He has that kind of sense of humor.
Yeah.
So so we rehearse a sketch. He's still talking to somebody. I leave, run back to my area, and I tell my guys, look down this hallway, because he's gonna be walking down there. If Christopher Walken's holding a cue card, I've got a great story for you. And he walks by and he's holding the cue card with the thing on it. And they're like, what? So I told him that story. So I see him at the party and we're talking and he's thanking me. And I go, did you get that cue card? He was like, I did. He was like, I just hope you know. I hope you get to keep some too. I go, he's like, what you're doing is art. And I saw that card with the last week's jokes and the speckles of paint. He's like, and that is art. He's like, I'm going to frame that and put that in my apartment because I hope you get to do that too. Because it's art that you do, and I hope you can appreciate that. And I was blown away by it. That's exactly what you just said. Or you think like Christopher Walken, which I don't know, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's a real thing. That's all.
How about that? How about that for a story? Is that pretty cool?
That's amazing. That is so great. And I mean, there's just, again, so many layers to it. I mean, the humanity and the hands and the craft and the creativity and the ingenuity and just the evolution and the creative destruction as well. Right. Because it's being born and then it lives and it dies and, you know, reborn again. And I don't know, man, that's so cool.
Yeah. It's a great story. I've got probably, 1,000 of stories like that. That I can't, we can't tell you. They're going to be in the book. You'll have to buy the book, Scott, to read the other ones. Hear the other ones.
Oh my God. When is the book coming out? Let's plug.
When SNL goes off the air.
I'm
writing these down and retelling them enough so that I'll remember them.
God. Yes. Right. Okay. Good. Well,
Cause there's a good, I'll tell you the ending of that story. There's a good ending to that story too. That's on top of that. So he's talking to me and his wife taps him on the shoulder. And she said, Steve wants to say goodbye. And he looks, sees that it's Steve Martin. I look and see that it's Steve Martin. And he goes, tell him to hold on a second. And he continues talking to me. And I'm like going, now I'm scared because, oh no, Steve Martin is waiting to talk to him. And he's talking to me. I'm like going, oh, go talk to Steve. He's like, no, wait a second. I want to say one more thing. And I was like, okay, I gotta go. It was so great seeing you again. I was like, oh my God, he put Steve Martin on hold to finish talking to me, which was like, that's pretty
that.
Cool.
Love that. That is cool, man. Cool. Wow, you must have to pinch yourself sometimes.
I really do. I mean, it's just, I'm very, very fortunate to for what I do and the people I get to work with. It's really nice.
Well, and it's just, you know, and again, one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the show and talk is just because there are so many jobs, vital jobs, that exist in the world, let alone in the arts or in entertainment, whatever, that most people don't know about.
Yeah.
Right. And unsung heroes, so to speak, right. Yeah. And that's what one of the things that I love doing and why I created the podcast is to create a space where we can honor, you know, those creative professionals who are making it all work, you know?
Yeah. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of hard work, but it's worthwhile. And you see a product at the end of the day, you hear the laughter and it's just so great to see these young cast members, you know, grow up in front of the camera, right in front of you, and you're helping them out, and you're helping, you know, a celebrity out every week, help them make them look good and have fun. It's just a great job. It's really, really fun.
So I have a weird question for you. So obviously tools of the trade, you know, paper and marker. Okay, fine. But clearly, like any artist or professional, you must have tools that, you know, your preferred toolbox and preferred set of tools. Are there specific kinds of paper that work better than others? What kind of markers do you like to use? It feels like this would be a great marketing opportunity for a Sharpie marker to sponsor
we do use Sharpies to label the cards and stuff like that, but the main thing we use are Pilot pens. And actually when Carson did that story on me on the Today Show, they saw me using a Pilot pen and then tweeted out to me, we see you while using our product and we like it. They sent me some gifts. They sent me free pens and sent me some stuff. And I was like, hey, I'll do an endorsement deal if you guys want, but they never got back to me on that. But we used to use these old metal markers, Marsh 99 markers that were leaky. Your hands were always, you always get ink on your hands. They were hard to use. And one of my workers that went to California and came back, they came back with these Pilots. And there's two sizes. There's a thin one, which I like, and there's this thick one, which everybody else uses. I've started using this a little bit. Mm-hmm. And they don't leak. And they don't smell as much as the other, you know, markers. And they're you can still refill them. But when the tip, you know, when this tip runs out, see how it's getting worn down a little bit there?
Yeah, right, right.
When it gets worn down, you know, you throw it out and you open up, you get another one. So
you get another head.
You just get a new marker. You just throw the whole marker away and you get it because they're disposable.
They're disposable.
You use it as long as you can and then you throw the other one.
Got you. And that's why they don't leak because they're not rechargeable or refillable.
Well, you can refill them. You can refill them, but it's just easier. Okay. Less, you get less ink on you. You still get ink on you once in a while when you're filling them, but it's just made things so much easier and streamlined things. And then the cards, we used to use white cards on the front. They're like a gray on the back, like a real cardboard color kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But we could never control the quality. Like, you know, my supplier could never get it from the same batch of, now they were recycled, but sometimes they would be too thick and they would bend. As you're holding them, they're bending backwards. Sometimes they'd be too thin and they'd be wobbling a little bit. It was annoying. You just never knew what you were going to get. And then like, I don't know, like maybe 5 or 6 years ago, I was like, how can we get like the same card every week so that I'm happy and I know, because that's a really big part of it, holding these cards.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, you could do the double white, the white on the back that you can't write on the other side, but I could get that same stock every single time. So I was like, great, send me some samples. He sent them to me. He's like, they're more expensive. And I was like, I don't care. I want that, yeah, you know, the sameness every week.
Yeah.
And they ended up being great. I've been using those for 6 years and it's revolutionized. I don't have to, every time I get a stock of 10,000, I don't have to look at them and say, I can't use these. They're too thin and they're wobbly. Right. I know they're going to be the same cut every single time I get them. And I can just start using them. I don't have to check them. So that has been a really big change in things. And, but yeah, that's it. We use tape, we use pens, and we use the cards, and that's pretty much it.
So are the cards, is the writing surface, is it coated or is it uncoated?
Yes.
It's coated.
Yeah. Just, yeah. It's coated that we write on. Yeah. Because if it wasn't, the ink would seep into the card and, yeah, eventually it would really, really fade.
And you only write on the one side. You don't write on both sides.
Correct.
Right,
correct.
Right. Just only the one side is coated.
Correct. There's some. There are double coated cards. That's, you know, they're twice as expensive, or maybe, you know, like half of expensive.
Yeah.
But you could write on both sides. But with SNL, you don't want to be holding a card, you know, with writing on the other side. You know, yeah, it just would get, yeah, way too confusing. And, yeah, you know, like, you know, sometimes they use a side and they would put a big X on it, like knowing, okay, we already did that side, but using the other side. My employees are not going to do that. They're going to end up throwing it out, and it's just going to, yeah, be a waste. So the one side is good enough.
Yeah, it would seem way too risky to try to be juggling, yeah, you know, multiple sided cards and,
yep,
you know, oh my God, yeah, where'd the punchline go?
Exactly. You know, exactly.
Like, oh shit. What is, yeah, the worst thing that's ever happened to you when it comes to, you know, being your cue card?
Cards. I've never dropped a card in 34 years during a show. So I'm very proud of that moment. I have. You know, you pull slow and then, you know, it ruins the joke, or you pull too fast and it ruins the joke, or a card sticks. You know, we tape over lines when we're doing changes. So if you tape over the edge of the card, it can stick to the next card. So that happened with I was holding a joke for Norm MacDonald when he was doing Weekend Update, and the card stuck and I went to go pull it and I couldn't pull it. I completely ruined the joke. Completely ruined it. So he read the setup, never read the punchline. It was just awful. And this is Norm MacDonald. I don't know if you know a lot about Norm, but, you know, he does not. Yeah. He doesn't care.
Right.
So I mouth, I'm sorry, like that. I mouth him like that. This is the live show, yeah, and he goes, "It's okay, Wally. Don't worry about it." On live TV, and I'm just like, "Oh, you just made things 10 times worse, Norm." But thanks. He didn't care. He didn't care, you know. And if I screw up on Seth, Seth makes a joke of it as well, you know. Like, instead of, why get mad, turn it into comedy. Turn it like, Wally, what happened there? What's going on? You know.
Totally.
So it turns into a fun thing. So yeah.
Well, and that says a lot about him, right? And
yes,
and, you know,
for sure.
And for sure. The Canadian part of him, maybe, yeah, as well. Yeah. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the egos are real, and I'm guessing that depending on who it might be, it might have ended differently.
Yes, you're not wrong.
You're not wrong.
You're not wrong. Nope.
Oh man, that must be quite interesting too, right? To sort of be so up close and personal with not just artists, these performers, these comics, and we all love them, but we also know that, you know, many of them are, you know, damaged human beings at some, yeah, level. And I mean that in the best way.
Yeah.
But then, you know, A-list celebrities coming through and, you know, the egos that come through and, you know, knowing how to tap dance around that. And it must just be like a breath of fresh air when you have like the Christopher Walken story or whatever, when you meet somebody who's just like really cool and human and down to earth and just fun to.
Oh my God. Yeah. It is. Yeah. That, I mean, I think that's why I've lasted so long on this job. Because of my personality and because, I'm not nothing. If someone's going to get, you know, be mean to me or not mean to me, but just like, you know,
yeah, being
you know,
dick.
Just not nice.
Right.
You know, when I'm there helping them out, that's fine. My job is to help them out, whether they're nice to me or not, you know,
right.
You know, 99% of them are nice. So it's not a problem. But you get somebody like Quinta Brunson, the show you saw, yeah. I walk in to say hi to her on Wednesday to see how her eyesight was. That's the first thing I talked to them about, how their eyesight is. And I was like, hey, and she's like, I know who you are. You're Wally. And she was like, ask me how I know who you are. I was like, how do you know who I am? She's like, my, my 95-year-old grandmother sent me an article that was written about you last week. Said I had to read this. This is the person you're going to be working with on SNL. So, I mean, she was just a joy. And I was like, well, we're going to have to get her a cue card. And she was like, really? I was like, yeah, of course we're going to get her a cue card. She's a fan of mine, you know? So we got her a cue card. I autographed it for her. And she just, every time she comes back, she was like, my grandmother loves you. She says to say hello. She comes, it's just so nice, you know? Like you get to, you meet these people and you see how they are. And she just came back and was, I think she was here for the Adebayo show.
Right.
I think Aya was on her show, right? Once.
Right.
Or twice.
Right. Yes.
And I'm getting changed after the show. I'm tired. I was trying to decide whether to go to the party or not, I think. And I hear, Wowie. I was like, who's yelling for me? And it was Quinta Brunson yelling for me. Like, I want to say hello. I want a picture with you to show my grandmother. I was like, I mean, how nice is that?
That's amazing.
How nice is that?
Wow.
Yeah. So I get 1,000 stories like that are just so nice, you know, really, really nice.
Oh boy, oh boy. No wonder you smile all the time. You got a great, I mean, you're a lucky human. And by the way, but it takes two, right? Like clearly your personality, your temperament, your mentality, your outlook on life, is at least half of it, right? If not more, because I mean, it takes two to tango. And if you were a jerk, you know, it wouldn't matter. You probably wouldn't even survive if you were a jerk. because you are who you are, not only are you surviving, you're like the guy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. Yeah. I mean, Seth talks about it a lot. You know, when kids ask, you know, what do we have? I just graduated from college. I want to get into entertainment business. What advice do you have for me? And he was like, be nice. He was like, be nice, because you have to be so talented if you're an asshole to be hired in this business. Mm-hmm. And there are assholes in the business. We all know that. But you have to be so talented. If you're nice and you work hard, you're going to get a job and you're going to do fine. Those are the people that they want to hire. It's like we had – the best thing they had when they started the show was they get to pick who they wanted to work with and set the environment, and they set the greatest, it's the greatest, most fun show to work with. We just celebrated 10 years, and every day I go into work there, I'm looking forward to it. I know everyone's going to be nice to me. Everyone's going to be nice to each other. And it's just a pleasure to be there, you know, and that's the cool thing about it, you know, and that's the way it should be nice and you'll do well. These guys are proving it.
It's so true. It's so true. I mean, I've hired a lot of artists over the years for various jobs or projects and things. And I've had artists, very talented artists, ask me, well, why didn't I get the gig? You know, and I was like, well, honestly, you didn't get the gig because your attitude isn't enough. I hired somebody who was equally talented, but they were nice.
Yeah.
You know, no ego. You know, or whatever, right? And it's true. It's true. How much of our life is work? And you know, why would we want to work with assholes? No, you want to work with people that, make you feel good.
Of course, you don't want to run into somebody you want to run into somebody in the hallway. You want to be able to say hello to them. You don't want to be like, oh no, this guy. You know, and you're responsible for hiring them. You know,
well, and especially when you're in an industry, and let's face it, I mean, there's a lot of glitz and glamour around TV and film, but at the end of the day, it's pretty small business.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, we're word travels. Your reputation is gonna, you know, people are gonna know whether or not you're a asshole or a good person.
For sure. Oh, it gets out. People know. People talk.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Wally, man, I could talk to you for another hour. I mean, it's 11 o'clock on the East Coast, 8 o'clock here. This has been a gift. I'm so grateful for you, man. And I've got so many things on my mind. I'm going to circle back with you.
Let's do it again. We'll do it down the road again.
I'd love it. And I'll let you know when the episode's going to drop so you can have a listen. And, you know, but it's such an honor having you here, man. Thanks for classing up the joint. Keep doing what you're doing. If I ever get a chance to be in the studio again at SNL, I will heckle you from the bleacher seat.
No, let me know. Did you get to go to the cast party when you came to the first
one? I did. Yeah, okay. It was pretty cool. It was funny because we were there and I was like, why is there's a couple like kind of like really serious dudes like in suits, like standing around. And then I realized, the Obama daughter was there that night.
Oh, right.
My, yep. what's her name? Not Malia. Was it Malia? It was Malia Obama.
It was the older one, I think.
Older one, yeah. And
Sasha,
I'm like,
Sasha.
Whoever the older one is.
Whoever the older one, I don't know.
The youngest one. But yeah. Anyway, I was like.
Yeah, you don't know.
You don't know. It's like, oh,
you don't know who's going to show up at those parties.
And you know, she was like, of course she was at Lauren's table, but you know.
Of course. So, all right. So you're tied into somebody at the show or NBC. So if you went to the show and the party, then you're tied in, Scott.
Just really specific, my wife works with Quinta. And so when she was going to be host of the show, we got invited to come. Right. And you know, jumped at the opportunity. Yeah,
she was the best. I loved her so much. And it's usually like, I don't watch Abbott Elementary. I hear it's great. I think I'm going to start watching it. It's the host that I don't know a lot about sometimes.
Yes,
that I have the best experiences with, because I'm just meeting them fresh. I don't know their track record. And I go in there, and it's always the ones that I love the most. You know, I'm not expecting anything, and they're always like so great and so good. Quinta was just so nice. I love her so much.
She's such a sweetheart. Her and her husband, Paul, they're just great.
Yeah.
They're real people.
I have Paul's number. We keep in touch. When every award she wins, I send him a little text. Tell Quinta I say congratulations.
Yeah, nice.
They're great. They're really good.
That's great. Well, I'll tell you what, Wally, you're great too, man. And I'll tell you what, thank you so much for this. We'll be in touch, and thank you for coming through. Thank you for all you do, and just keep on trucking, brother.
My pleasure. And anybody wants a cue card, cuecardsbywally.com.
Exactly. So let's pause there for a second, because I will absolutely promote it even before, but you're 100% right, guys. Check this out. So Wally does custom cue cards for special gifts, occasions, you know, friends, family, whatever it is. I just love it. I actually bought one because I wanted to have him write up the intro to this podcast, the Not Real Art podcast, and how I kind of open every episode with my greetings and salutations, my creative brothers and sisters. And I jumped at the chance to get one of these custom cards by Wally, and I love it. He made me a video to go with the card as he's signing it. He's teasing me. He's talking to me in the video. It's just great. I get this card delivered to me. It was completely safe. It arrived intact. I couldn't believe it. And,
me too, sometimes.
And in the video, and it's just such a fantastic gift for anyone special in your life or special occasion. Wally, the website is cuecardsbywally.com, right?
Correct. Correct.
Yes. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. And anything you want to add to that? What did I miss?
No, that's it. You know, lately I've been doing a lot of wedding proposals. People are, like, they're having a wedding. The guy's going to, you know, I write what he's going to say to his girlfriend to propose to her.
Love
and
that.
Then I'm doing weddings where they hold the card and pose with all the wedding party. It's fantastic. It's such a cool thing. So any fans of SNL or Late Night, or even, you know, Late Night, Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, you know, anything like that, you want to, you know, propose to your girlfriend, or you want to put it in your wedding, or you want to just give it as a gift. It's great.
God, I'm happy to do it for you. How fun really is that? Fun. That's great, man.
Really fun.
Well, Wally, you're the best, dude. Thanks so much for this. Go, it's Miller time for you, or whiskey time for you. I don't even know what to do at 11 o'clock. Go grab a drink. Sleep well, my friend. Appreciate it, Wally.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Not Real Art Podcast. Please make sure to like this episode, write a review, and share it with your friends on social. Also, remember to subscribe so you get all of our new episodes. Not Real Art is produced by Crew West Studios in Los Angeles. Our theme music was created by Ricky Peugeot and Desi DeLauro from the band Parlor Social. Not Real Art is created by We Edit Podcasts and hosted by Captivate. Thanks again for listening to Not Real Art. We'll be back soon with another inspiring episode celebrating creative culture and the artists who make it.